France organised didn't see fit to inform me about their disruption and road closures. I don't see why I should let them know about my JCB rally on the same day. That's the spirit. Because it can seem unusual here to the outsider. The sign on the road as you're leaving Hebden Bridge, instead of saying, thank you for driving carefully, says, I'm sure you all know...
That's so Hebden Bridge.
So Hebden Bridge. Which is, the sign is so Hebden Bridge. That's the sort of thing that makes me love it here. Are all your signs like that? If there's a crash, do you have a yellow sign going, OMG, fatal accident, awkward? Many places where a teacher does this, according to the book A Sense of Belonging I've got there, this is an exact quote, I gave each child in my class a leaflet about checking for nits, and the next day one of them brought in a letter from his parents saying, nits have every right to live. Hebden Bridge, we all know you went through an even more harrowing disaster recently than the NITS crisis, because at Christmas 2015, the whole town was almost washed away. You must have been grateful, I would imagine, that you had plenty of practical people here with the skills needed for an emergency like that, such as cat reiki. All through Christmas, wasn't it? And it must have seemed biblical, absolutely biblical. To make things even more religious, as part of the clearing up, it seems you were visited by the Ahmadiyya Muslims and Khalsa Aid Sikhs, who set up kitchens to feed the town while you were underwater. Now, see, if you were a normal town and the shops were full of pot noodles, the water would have just puffed them up and you'd have been fine. But... instead, the Muslims and the Sikhs came in and prepared all these meals, and the effect wasn't just to feed people, because one lad was quoted in the newspaper as saying, I used to hate Asians, but I'm ashamed of that now I see how they're helping us. Which just goes to show, I think, if only Muslims and Sikhs everywhere could be bothered to go round everybody's house and clean up and make everyone dinner, maybe people wouldn't be racist. Even when it's dry in Hebden Bridge, it's unorthodox here, because as soon as you arrive at the magnificent Hebden Bridge station, with its floral displays and antiques and that idyllic 1950s bar that makes you want to grab a stranger and say, must you leave, dearest? You see, I've had the most splendid day getting our hearts aligned, and that skunk we smoked by the river was simply delicious. But no one should be fooled by Hebden Bridge, because you're not as shambolic as you sometimes like to look. You can tell this from the impressive level of organisation that it takes to organise a town centre in which there are 200 shops, 198 of which are cafes. That's... and there's a cafe for every type of person. There's a dog cafe full of dogs that makes cakes especially for dogs. I'd like to speak to Jonathan. And you all know the dog cafe, presumably?
Yes.
So you sell dog cakes, and what other products have you got there?
You know you get numb to it when you do it every day, and then put it in this context. Beer.
Dog beer.
Dog beer. Not for humans. That'd be ridiculous.
What's in the dog beer? Is it like puddles? And what about other animals? Are other animals...
We've had a cat in a bag, a skunk in a bag, and a rabbit in a bag.
A skunk? Is it anywhere else? That would be the front page headline. But here... Oh, there was skunk ink bug. Oh, the smell put the dogs off their beer. In here, because this town is a mix of modern flakiness and tradition, and because it's an old mill town, it's got a rivalry with all the other nearby mill towns, especially the pitiful den of sordid squalor that goes under the name of Todmorden. I'll give an example of the rivalry. The Todmorden News was due to be merged with the Hebden Bridge Times. And you weren't happy with this then. There's been uproar from the Hebweb website with comments such as this one. Something could be headline news in Todmorden, but it would only merit a small item for people in Hebden. So what do people think of Todmorden? Is it...
Well,
that's what I thought that. I thought it's got much in common, because there's even a lesbian community in Todmorden started up that makes it a sort of lesbian overspill town. recently there's been a campaign here, which has even been discussed on Radio 4, to have Hebden Bridge, did you know about this, installed officially as Britain's second town. Now, I hope this doesn't sound insulting. I think that's quite ambitious. So I'm going to speak to David here. And you're from the Innovations Mill.
That's true, yep.
What is the claim? Is that, have I got that right? To make?
No, no, you got it wrong. It's not Britain's second town, it's Britain's second city.
I'm putting Hebden Bridge down.
Let's get it right. There's a place that we hear about, but only visit when we have to, with about 12 million people in Greater London and South East region, and it dominates. And we want to have our own place up here. So we've got Britain's second city with a population of between 7 million and 12 million, depending where you draw the borders. And in the centre of it is Hebden Bridge. And because it's Hebden Bridge, it's everything you'd expect. It's an upside-down town. It's a city with a glorious green belt in the middle and suburbs with quaint names like Manchester, Liverpool, Sheffield, Bradford.
I think you're underselling yourself because you're only 300 miles from Paris, so surely you're France's second city.
Well, come on, give us a break, you know, a step at a time. I mean, where else? I travel all over the world and I really enjoy it. It's a passion of mine is travelling. But there's only one place that's worth living in, and it's here.
OK. Yay! Thanks very much, David. And I'll come back to you in a little minute, but I've got to say this. David is the most brilliant person to meet when you first come to Hebden Bridge, because there's no way of stopping him talking. I met him and he started by going, thing with this town is it we're getting depleted, I want it to refurbish the area. So in 60s, property were cheap and we used the beauty of valley to attract artistic types. And the marvellous thing is we're halfway online between Leeds and Manchester, whereas Todmorden thought it's in Yorkshire, though its cricket team plays in Lancashire League. And then I thought, when this was discussed on Radio 4, did it end with a whistle blowing and Nicholas Parsons saying, so David is this week's winner? He's been talking without hesitation for 9 years. But David's story is impressive because the amazing thing about this place with its dog cafes and massages and ramblers is this was a town of the Industrial Revolution. As it's a valley, then the water comes down the hills at a fair speed, making it a perfect place to set up mills. Now, the negative side of being in a valley is, of course, that you get flooded regularly, although it could be argued you're not helping the situation by making God angry with all the lesbians. But that's... The cloth here was ideal for making corduroy, so that became the Hebden Bridge speciality. According to that book, A Sense of Belonging, people took kids to school past the gasworks if they had a cold, as they thought the fumes killed germs. And if the gasworks were still here, there'd be a card in the chip shop saying, £50 gas therapy. And scrawled across it would be, germs have every right to live. So most people here, back in Victorian times, either worked in the mills or as farm labourers, but many of the mills were run as cooperatives. Now, the co-op movement started up the road in Rochdale, and by the 1870s, the weavers actually ran some of the mills, and a Hebden Bridge weaver called Robert Housted set one up here, where the profits were shared out amongst the workforce. And the weavers were encouraged to learn languages during their breaks, and university lecturers came to Hebden Bridge to give talks on subjects such as the French Revolution and Shakespeare. And I'm not an expert on Shakespeare, but I reckon Shakespeare's meant to be done in Yorkshire. It's meant to be. Here, without licking it, Woods Lark, I thought, that's ghost, is that? As is that fella murdered me? I said, he never did. He said, aye. He said, thou wants to get revenge, does thee? I said, happens, or did like. Well, next thing, our town's been stabbed and we're all deed on the floor. It had a lot to do with that. The local co-op movement here campaigned in support of Abraham Lincoln and against slavery at the time of the American Civil War. And there were meetings at Todmorden as well in favour of Abraham Lincoln. But even if Abraham Lincoln had turned up himself, it may have been headline news in Todmorden. A small item in Hebden Bridge. But however eccentric Hebden Bridge may seem now, in some ways it was even more peculiar in the past. For example, there's a book set here. It's possibly the most magnificent title of any book ever. It's called Memoirs of a Japanese Chicken Sexer in 1935 Hebden Bridge. Some of you know this book? Is it on the school curriculum? The chick insexer in question was Koichi Ando, and he trained at a special chicken sexing school in a place called Nagoya, and then came to Hebden Bridge. He learnt to tell the sex of baby chickens and then applied for a job at a farm here. And it's quite difficult to read his memoirs without doing them in a terrible voice, because they say things like, "In morning, I sex chicken about 1,400. I went to barber's, he trim in disorderly fashion, therefore I felt itchy very much." He must have come as a challenge, I would guess, because on top of everything else, Hebden Bridge chickens wouldn't want to be labelled by gender in the first place. But how did this town go from being a Yorkshire farming and trouser-making centre to become the psychic Harper-lining New Age multi-cafe valley it is today? It seems that in the 1950s, the mills mostly shut down, half the population left. You could buy a house for 50 quid or move in and squat. So artists and hippies moved in, and David Fletcher told me, amongst other things... The first to come were Reg and Marion, but Reg was arrested for possession of dope, so the vicar paid his fine, and the vicar turned out to be Anna Ford, the newsreader's brother. It's true, isn't it, David? Many of the houses at the time were condemned as slums, and they were unusual because they were known as top and bottom houses. The two houses were built on top of each other on the steep hills, with a front door into the top one and then a lower down the hill, another front door into the bottom house. And sets of these houses were opposite each other. So one writer here said, "You learn not to walk round naked if your house is overlooked." Really? In Hebden Bridge? It's more likely people think, "Oh, it was so embarrassing. I was walking around the kitchen in full view of the neighbours and I wasn't naked." Who knows what the kids Ocelot and Polar Bear thought. So this was the way the town was renewed, by encouraging hippies to move in. And David also told me that if the town hoped to bring in a lot of new people, it would have to look a lot more attractive than it was. So this must be the only time anywhere when people said, "Oh, we'd better tidy up and make the place look nice. We've got hippies coming." So, I've got to come back to David again here. So, did the old residents object, or did they welcome the hippies?
They welcomed them, and the hippies were really glad to be here. A lot of them came here from Robin Hood's Bay. In Robin Hood's Bay, every Saturday night, there was a drunken crowd outside the cottage where they were living, chucking stones at their door. Then they came here, and, you know, Reg and Marion were good at the guitar and singing, and they went round the local pubs, and everybody was delighted. It was a bit of a revelation. And then there were the Foster Clough hippies. They came out here thinking they could do self-sufficiency at 1,000 feet in the Pennines. You must be joking. But after a little while, when they were all starving, they started making bits of jewellery and doing bits of woodworking, chess sets made out of broom handles, you know, the sort of thing.
And, I do, yeah. I wish I'd known a bit more about David before I come. I would have only needed to write 4 lines. But was it just hippies? It was artists came as well. I mean, artists pop up in places you wouldn't always expect. I went to John the Barber's, which looks like a proper old-fashioned barber's, run by John, who moved up here from East London. And it turns out to be the only barber's that's also got an art gallery. Then all round the walls there are these brilliant portraits and paintings he's done. And it's even better because he's proper East London, John. I swear this is what he said when I went in there. He went, "I'll tell you what I love about here, Mark. You see that hill up there? You go up there, you know what you can see? Bugger all." Perfect for painting, that is. How many people have had their hair done by him? Well, I want to know, when he's finished, instead of a mirror, does he show you an oil painting of the back of your head? But the old Yorkshire customs here haven't died away. For example, there's still a competition every year for who can make the best dock pudding. Now, this is considered a delicacy here, although the recipe is to scrunch up dock leaves and stinging nettles and fry them with oatmeal and onion. And I have to tell you, that I don't see that as a recipe. That's more a desperate attempt to stay alive when you've been stranded in a stranded in a forest as the only survivor of a plane crash. There's a world championship dock pudding contest. Has anyone here ever entered?
No.
Sorry, what's your name? Elizabeth. So you entered the World Dock Pudding Championship?
I did.
And did you have a special recipe, or did you...
I'm not telling, like everybody else, we don't share them.
Oh!
Somebody a few years ago tried to mess about with it and add garlic and was completely disqualified. The judges were not impressed.
What's this? Garlic? And it's stinging nettles? I'm trying to give it flavour.
It's beautiful.
This is what I learned about a dock pudding. You're supposed to fry these lumps of dock leaves and nettles with bacon. And there was uproar one year when the world championship was won by a woman who made a vegetarian dock pudding. Now, I can see why people were puzzled, because most people would give the prize to someone who just fried the bacon and left out everything else. Perfect for Hebden Bridge is the history of the football team, the Red Stars. There is a book, The History of the Red Stars. This is a true story of Hebden Bridge's team. In 1950s, Nick Helliwell, for a match away at Copley, brought his mother's nightie by mistake. With pink edgings. But played in the nightie as the game had to go on. Because it was inevitable that the world's first cross-dressing football player played for Hebden Bridge. Another side to the romance of the area is the poet Ted Hughes came from, please, Lord, get this right, Mythenroyd. And many of his hilarious and joyful poems were set in the valley. The one about the hawk that sees its prey and rips it to shreds without a second thought is a favourite at Christmas. And his trilogy about misery is ideal for kids' parties. Now, according to his memoirs, yesterday I went into Hebden Bridge and signed up to discover me inner clown. Best 50 quid I ever spent. But to be fair, eventually, Ted decided to cheer himself up by marrying Sylvia Plath. Now, after they were married, they only came back to Hebden Bridge occasionally, and they wrote their famous poem that I'm sure you all know, set in Hebden Bridge. Or River Corder, bringing order to life's rough game at chance. We went down today, but in the way was the bastard Tour de France. But the most controversial mark he left was Sylvia's gravestone, because she killed herself after she'd left Ted, who wasn't always the gentleman. But Ted had her body brought back to Heptonstall, and then he ordered her gravestone to read Sylvia Plath Hughes. So feminist campaigners regularly went to the gravestone and chiselled off the Hughes. It's on at the moment, I noticed. I mean, so the stonemasons had to keep a regular supply of chiselled out Hugheses as a quick stick-on replacement. Now, this is a perfect example of how old and new Hebden Bridge traditions complement each other. The skilled stonemason chisels Hughes in, then the feminist smashes it off again, making a point and creating work to preserve the old crafts all at once. I went up to the graveyard. It was a slightly peculiar experience. Have you all been there?
Yes.
I was shown to Sylvia's grave by a man of about 70, because I don't think you'd find it otherwise. Not easy to find. And as I went into the graveyard, he went, "Are you looking for Sylvia Plath? She's not easy to find. This church here were burnt down by lightning. Imagine how scary that must have been." "I love her poems. They're very dark. They're very scary. I wrote one myself. I left it on grave. 24 hours later, it were gone. Now, you explain that." Now, marvellously, one person who seems to embody this outlook of a growing, inclusive spirit full of joie de vivre was the press secretary for Margaret Thatcher, a man called Bernard Ingham, who comes from Hebden Bridge. And when he was asked what he thought about his hometown, he said, "Hebden Bridge is tantamount to Sodom and Gomorrah." To be fair, it's nice to see a politician giving a straight answer to a question. used to write a column for the Hebden Bridge Times, and at one point he made this measured remark saying, that Hebden Bridge has become known as a lesbian capital does not say very much for the men of the town. In his favour, there is a charming simplicity to seeing the world like this, as if the women of Hebden Bridge have looked at all the blokes and gone, bloody hell, they're all dreadful, there's nothing for it, we'll have to start on each other. There was a brilliant saying called getting the bus to Hebden Bridge. Do people know about this? Which meant coming out as a lesbian. Now, the first question I have to ask here, what if you really were getting the bus to Hebden Bridge? And you told someone that's what you were doing. There must have been people all over Yorkshire going, well, I never would have thought that about Elsa. But now Hebden Bridge is changing again. The book A Sense of Belonging says, watch the trains that get in at Mytham Royd station around 9 a.m, and you'll see a flood of lawyers arriving. There are now, did you know this? There are now more people with degrees per population in Hebden Bridge than in any other town. And so much intelligence in Hebden Bridge, and yet somehow you can't work out, you can't cure diarrhoea with a harp. This is... So, it seems Hebden Bridge has gone on a marvellous route of history in which the mills declined, so half the town left, so the houses were condemned and cheap, so artists and hippies moved in, so the place became chic, so then the property prices soared, so now the artists and hippies that came here and made it chic can't afford to live here and the place is full of solicitors. But the free spirit is definitely still here. There are no mainstream shops because who wants items that someone might own in Halifax? Sainsbury's wanted to buy land here and there's a campaign against them because you could fit another 9 cafes on that bit of ground. One of the charms of Hebden Bridge is it was built as a dirty industrial mill town and now the canals and mills are seen as things of beauty that people love to live by and wander around. It's like if in 200 years' time a retail park on the edge of Burnley becomes the most desirable area. With people going, oh, it's just delightful. I mean, our flat was converted from a Nando's. We just love rambling around the old Sports Direct and they've still kept the original bins at the back of Iceland. Because in a way, this town hasn't changed that much. From the setting up of the co-ops, it's kept out the corporate shops and you still call eating leaves a treat. You'd expect the football team to express themselves as a piece of performance art. You've campaigned for people's rights from slaves to people who can't be bothered to get dressed. It's fitting, therefore, I think, that I leave you with the words of your most celebrated local poet, Ted Hughes, in his poem dedicated to the people of this area that he loved so much. And thank you very much, Hebden Bridge. I'll leave you with this. They swoop for prey at the co-op for soya. And if they've not got it, they'll sue they're a lawyer. There's respect for wild nature as if times were feudal, with cafes that serve cups of tea for a poodle. When the town floods, folk don't sit around whining. They go to town nude for some harp realigning. And for carnal delights to please lesbian purists, ask where they're found at the office for tourists.
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele, with additional material by Pete Sinclair. It was produced in Hebden Bridge by Carl Cooper, and it was a BBC Studios production.
Best thing about Kingston is
Kingston's on a river.
Mm.
I love the river boats.
The falling down telephone boxes.
The River Thames.
Do you think it's posh here? Quite posh.
Do I think it's posh here? I don't think one can say.
There's all fur coat and no knickers.
The best thing about Kingston is there are two Gregs.
Posh?
New Malden, what's it famous for?
Everybody knows that.
It's full of South Koreans.
The largest Korean population outside of Korea.
Kimchi, obviously.
It is the centre of the universe.
Mark Steele's In Town.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Mark Steele's In Town, which this week comes from Kingston upon Thames, one of the roughest townships in the area, where southwest London meets Surrey. have had to seek special protection from the feral urban youth who sit around in gangs making comments such as, "Eh, bruv, like that swan looking at you mean blood, isn't it?" But despite that, Kingston is a part of London that even if you come for 5 minutes, you will stay for the day. Going, how do I get out of this bloody runway? I mean, I'm trying to make a point of not doing stuff about one-way systems because you could say, but this one is better than anywhere. It is actually magic, that road system, because you find yourself going, I've just crossed the river, now I'm back on the same side I was when I started. It should have been used in the Harry Potter film. Oh, no, Hermione, we're stuck in the Kingston one-way bridge of uncrossability. But that is more than made up for by the fact that you are the Royal Borough of Kingston. One of only four Royal Boroughs in the country. If someone from Kingston goes to a borough like Lewisham, you must stand there in utter confusion, thinking, well, where do they row? This was where the first crossing over the Thames was built, and someone here told me most residents wish that was one way to keep out undesirables. But it would be unfair to suggest there's any snobbery in Kingston. This is a down-to-earth royal borough, which is why one of the comments I received on Twitter from someone in the town said, Kingston is there to stop the riffraff from blundering into Surbiton. So it must be a joy to be a bit above everywhere else, I would imagine, except when you hear a voice going, yes, but not above us, you see, we're Richmond. It's an exciting borough, Kingston, as you could tell from the comedies that are set here. The Good Life was here. Reggie Perrin was supposed to live here. And once his excuse for getting in late was Badger Etta Junction box at New Malden. For decades, if anybody wanted to set a character in a dull, suburban, middle-class, tedious environment that anyone sane is desperate to escape from, you can be proud that they chose the borough of Kingston. So it's marvellous that as the symbol of unexciting suburbia, you managed to share a name with the capital of Jamaica. I reckon there must be some people who come here because they've got the wrong place. I bless Kingston upon our sat Navaravia where I live among our brethren. If I bless and I get stuck in her ass, glad one-way system for go here, there, back this way, that till I get vexed for a shara already crossed River of Zion. Very polite. I'm under no illusions that any of you get any of them words. But Kingston is an area that can attract the wealthy, and you can see why from this comment on a forum that I found about Kingston. I used to work in Blockbusters in Kingston, and the rest of the staff would occasionally get excited because the Chelsea goalkeeper was a regular. I didn't have a clue who he was, so I'd serve him with the same contempt I had for all our customers. But we are being unfair here, Kingston, because this is a hugely important cultural centre. One of the great works of European art is in Kingston, because along with Van Gogh's sunflowers and Salvador Dali's clocks, everybody knows the falling telephone boxes of Kingston. A row of telephone boxes on the old London Road that look as if they're falling on top of each other and are so adored by the locals. For example, one woman interviewed in the local paper, Pat Arnold, who worked for BT, said, I didn't realise they were art. I thought the company had piled them up to cart them off to the dump. Tools, which I'm sure you love, the famous department store. You'd think it would be enough to have a famous store like that, but the council tells us a significant feature is an escalator that travels from the ground to the second floor. It is the largest single truss escalator in the world with only a top and bottom support. What's the point of shopping anywhere else? And you're not just on any escalator, you're on the least supported, highest, unsafest escalator in the world. You should go further and say, and the lifts are held up by the most fraying cables in the world. Bentall's own website has moved with the times. It says, Tight on time, browse the many services we have to offer, such as personal shopping, bra fittings and foreign exchange. What a splendid selection of services. And, to be fair, if I wanted a bra fitting done, I would have it done by Bentalls. They can keep an entire escalator up with a single truss. So breasts are a doddle to Bentalls. You like showing off with your shops here. You're probably used to it, but it's not like this in most places with your grand Tudor building that anywhere else would be called the Great Hall and hired out for posh weddings. Here it's a branch of Next. In the Tudor Next, there is actually a plaque by the staircase saying, "This oak staircase was a notable feature of the building when it was the Castle Inn." Your high street chain stores have historic plaques. I bet in Greg's the Baker's there's one saying, "This glass cabinet once kept warm the sausage rolls of the Duke of Wellington." There's a branch of John Lewis, and on the ground floor there's an exhibit of the original bridge that goes over the Thames, and you can look at it through the glass. If you go shopping somewhere a bit down market, like Guildford, you'd probably go, "Well, we went into the newsagents for a Kit Kat, and do you know they didn't have a single marble statue?" Now, the other unique feature of John Lewis is the dual carriageway goes through the middle of it. Other one-way systems don't stand a chance. They're not in the same league of inaccessibility, are they? I bet the John Lewis Christmas advert isn't filmed in their Kingston branch, is it? Mummy, look at the lonely seal cub. He looks as if he's crying. If only someone could find him a home, he might not be so sad.
I'm in the right-hand lane, everyone, you arsehole! I'm turning left on a wood street!
Show someone some love this Christmas. I've actually heard someone suggest that the ring road could be used as a motor racing circuit, like in Monte Carlo, which would be magnificent, the only Grand Prix ever where the drivers got lost. "Hello, crew, Wood Street, no entry from here, can't see any way out, completely stuck, looks like I'm going back over the bridge, over." "Jensen, is John Lewis on your left or the right? Over." "Both, over." "Okay, don't worry, Nico Rosberg's actually on the fourth floor in home furnishings. He's given up, he's bought a coffee table, over." All history's here. There's a market house in the main square with a golden queen on the roof. But when Bryony and Catherine from Kingston Guides were showing us round, they said, "Up there is Queen Anne, who's been there for over 300 years. And a drunk bloke come over. He went, "Oh, excuse me." Now, anywhere else, you'd think, "Oh, he wants 50p. But here, honestly, he said, "That's not Anne, that's Queen Victoria." Queen Victoria! And the brilliant thing is, they started arguing with him. This is the sort of thing that they must start having on BBC 4 to make history popular. Never mind David Starkey tonight on BBC 4, a debate about Tudor Britain between a local historian and a man who's been drinking special brew since 7:30. I'd like to introduce, at this point, Bryony. Where's Bryony? All right. Hello, Bryony. So, was the drunk man a regular debating partner?
He turns up occasionally. Oh, does he? Yes.
He was quite insistent that it was Queen Victoria. Yeah. He started to win me round.
He actually said to me later, "I was there when it was built."
Yeah. And when was it built?
1703. Yes.
Now, you've got to tell us all about the man who designed the one-way system and what happened to him.
Well, the one-way system was installed between 1986 and 1989, and it was absolute hell because the traffic kept changing direction. So one day it would be going clockwise, another day it would be anti-clockwise. And one day he forgot that he'd rerouted the traffic round the other way, stepped in front of a car and got his leg broken.
Thank you very much, Jane, for that justice. Kingston then always enjoyed a certain superiority over other boroughs. No wonder you think of yourself, the Royal Borough of Kingston, with your royal breeding, because Kingston was once a sort of capital of England in a way, because the other side of the river was where the Danes controlled, and so the Saxon kings were crowned here in the 10th century. There's a record of King Edgar on the morning of the ceremony complaining his crown didn't fit. Do you know that one, Bryony? His crown didn't fit. But luckily, Queen Elfrieda popped into next and got it changed with an outer spoon. But you're hiding something here, because the borough hasn't always been like this. The book All Change tells us Surbiton's name means commuter land, but its name was once synonymous with illicit sex. It was an isolated spot where seemingly blameless gentlemen could indulge themselves with ladies of pleasure without their family being any the wiser. Surbiton was the first dogging site in Britain. Surbiton, I must have been very polite dogging though, mustn't it? That must have been complicated. Dogging in Victorian Surbiton. Madame, my client, Mr. Cottesloe of Walpole Road, Surbiton, purveyor of fine candles, requests an evening of mutual masturbation with your good son. So it's got a more earthy history than you might make out. And so at this point, now, Robin, is Robin about? Robin, because you were sort of saying that Kingston's changed over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one of the big things that we discovered a few years ago was the fact that it was water from Seething Wells, Surbiton, that was used by Dr. John Snow to prove that cholera was waterborne, and that the engineer James Simpson, who built the filter beds there, created the model of filter beds still used all around the world. So we've actually got the centre, the start of epidemiology, public health. And as you know, Kingston celebrates it massively.
I mean, as soon as you arrive here, it's just epidemiology.
You must be sick of it.
So using the river, you think, has only been sort of happened as an attraction, has only happened recently?
Well, it's certainly for a long, long while we pretended the river wasn't there, and I think in the ideal world, the relief road, we'd have tarmacked it so people could have done that. But actually, over the last 10, 15, 20 years, actually, we've started to look to it, and it's become a great magnet for activity, for fun. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to go.
It is a beautiful river. I mean, I can understand why it was only sort of 20 years ago that people discovered it.
Yeah.
It's very hidden river. And it's just a shame there's not a clue in the name Kingston upon Thames at the night. Might be a river anywhere near.
I know. It's a mystery.
Thanks very much, Robin. Thank you. Now, I've been on the boat. We've all been on the boat trips, haven't we?
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. The ride up to Hampton Court was really, really beautiful. There's going to be one of them commentaries. I love the commentaries where the people there have done the same thing 1,000 times and they're bored silly and there's just these jokes they're fed up of saying. And I thought it was going to be like, Hampton Court was home to Henry VIII, who it is said invented fractions. He certainly has my sympathy. He had 6 wives. Poor fellow. I've only got 1. That's enough for me. At least he was allowed to behead them. These days, the politically correct brigade would come down on you like a ton of bricks. Speaking of bricks, Hampton Court was built using more than 40 bricks. Each one weighing more than Wiltshire. But instead of that, nothing. I went up to the end, I said, I was disappointed there wasn't a commentary. He said, what's the point? There's a path that side, ours is that side, there you go. Is Hampton Court. Yeah, but I suppose round here you're used to a branch of Quick Fit looking like that, so... Then There's this paddle steamer, the Southern Belle. I love the paddle steamer. And it's great. You think you're in Louisiana. I wanted someone to come up and go, "Now, listen here, when I first sailed up the river back in the day, that was so long ago, the escalator in Bentall's didn't even have one truss. I had to get myself a rope and climb up the wall to the third floor when I wanted to get my brassiere fitted." Incidentally, is it in the contract when you buy a house by the river that every time a boat goes by, you have to wave? Must be, but they're trying to smile. Sick of waving! I bet there's some of those houses. Oh, no, we have a woman comes in and does our waving for us. Now, this brings us to one of my favourite parts of the borough, New Morden. Lovely part. I mean, to start with, some people in New Morden have fought the most magnificent battle to stop the whole area being ruined by putting in a cycling lane. The local community had to explain its objections and they put forward a thoroughly reasonable case, and I promise I'm not making this up. "The proposed cycle path between Wrens Park and New Morden could lead to terrorist attacks. Also to undiscovered unexploded bombs and a potential to poison the London water supply." Now, it is possible that the residents have mixed up a cycle lane with a nuclear power plant. When this was reported in the local paper, one response in the comments section said, "The terrorist threat is real. In 2009, MI6 discovered a plot to make badgers carry bombs. Recently, rumours have reached MI6 that ISIS are training badgers to ride bikes through Kingston to avoid the fight." And I thought, now, I like this man, he knows how to be sarcastic. And then I thought, oh no, if you met him, he'd go, "No, it's true." But there is something about New Morden even more fascinating than that, because New Morden is the area with the biggest population of Koreans anywhere in the world outside Korea. No one even quite knows for certain why this is, as far as I can work out. For some reason, 15,000 Koreans, maybe more, have decided the time has come to leave our country and friends for the opportunities offered by a suburb of Kingston-upon-Thames where people think cycle lanes blow up. Now, I first discovered this New Morden Korean connection when the World Cup was in South Korea in 2002. And I came here to watch South Korea's matches at the Fountain Pub, as it was packed. It was brilliant. It was packed with Koreans just banging gongs, which you don't often get that at football. Clang, ding, ding, clang, ding, ding, dang, dang, like a really angry Buddhist Iron Maiden. And most of the crowd was women with their toddlers, which is a marvellous football crowd, not one you get used to. It's like a sort of giant Korean football World Cup 1 o'clock club. And I wondered whether the mums all sit in circles teaching the kids songs such as, "The referee on the bus is a wanker all day long." Several theories about why Koreans moved here. There's a theory that the ambassador lived here, so Korean people followed him. In the 1950s, there was a factory here. It was said that lots of Koreans worked in. But none of them really stand up. There is a theory that one Korean came here in 1958 and 5 years later was going, "How do I get out of the one way?" Then his family came to rescue him and they got stuck. And now there are 15,000 of them trying to find the right turn onto the A3. But it means the high street in New Morden is amazing. One of the most popular foods there. Do we know this? Kimchi. You familiar with kimchi? Now, this is brilliant about New Morden. See, even though you don't have to be Korean, you will all be familiar with kimchi. I looked up kimchi. A New Morden Korean recipe for it starts, "My mouth always waters at the slightest whiff of this pungent fermented cabbage." I wonder if they need to sell it better. And something else that can be seen peculiar if you come to New Morden is the Korean habit of giving you gifts. You can leave a restaurant and you just get given a present. Now, this throws English people of my generation. I mean, in an English cafe, if you went in there and they went, oh, there you go, white bacon, egg, beans, chips, sausage, mushrooms, mug of tea, that'll be £5.90, love. And then gave you a lampshade, you'd go... I'm not going in there again, they're a front for drugs. I got a message on Twitter from a Korean, says, the Koreans in New Malden love giving stuff away. I once got given a pack of crackers when I bought a skirt. It must be exhausting. Every time you wander outdoors, you're going to have to go with a shopping trolley. Oh, no, I went in the post office, I got given a bath mat. I popped in the shop for a packet of biscuits, was given a chest of drawers. Carry piles of stuff around all day to give to other people as well. Oh, no, someone's asked me the time. I better give him his shoes. And one essential element as well to the Korean community is Norebang, which is Korean karaoke. It's brilliant. It isn't just the young Koreans that go to Norebang. Every generation goes to Norebang. So the businessmen and the CEOs and that, they just think it's normal to go to Norebang at lunchtime and sing and dance in a small room to the Korean pop called K-pop. Norebang seems to have a similar role to Koreans as a cup of tea does traditionally to the English. And I think the rest of the English should learn from this, I reckon. We'd come in from the shops then and go, oh, I'm worn out. Oh, I've been rushed off my feet, I really have. I'll put the Norebang on. Oh, that's better. I can face looking after the wash. But there's been a twist to the Korean population in New Malden because recently a few hundred North Koreans have come here as well, having escaped the dreadful regime in North Korea. Now, this must be a huge culture shock to come here from a country that has to name everything after Kim Jong-un, the leader, to an area where no one would dream of giving a whole borough a name that meant it belonged to a head of state. One of the most unsettling things about coming from North Korea to Kingston must be that you're used to the most ridiculous laws, whereas here we only have sensible rules, such as swan upping. This is the law that the country's swans are owned by the monarch, but there are 5 days when the worshipful company of dyers and vintners can own swans on one part of the Thames as long as they mark each swan to show it's one of theirs. According to Buckingham Palace's website, a flotilla of rowing skiffs manned by swan uppers in scarlet rowing shirts, headed by the Queen's swan marker, wearing a hat with a white swan feather, row, crying, "All up!" when they see a swan. The North Koreans must think we've escaped to the one place in the world where the laws are even more mental than where we're going. If you go down the river at night, listen carefully. If you're lucky, you'll hear the sound of someone going, "That's Queen Victoria's swan, that is." "Yeah, bloody is, she told me herself, it's a swan!" And this is the home of one of the most famous dogs ever. The dog who lived here and became the picture for his master's voice. Nipper the dog. Nipper was photographed by his owner in the 1890s while listening to an early phonograph. And his image became so well known that an alley has been named after him. Nipper Alley. And the local news reported, Jennifer Butterworth, chairman of the Kingston Society, was dismayed by this news. She said, "It's really daft. You know what dogs do in alleys. Things are just getting worse and worse and worse." Absolutely. Things are just getting worse and worse. It starts with an alley named after a dog. Before you know it, there'll be a branch of Sports Direct that wasn't designed by Christopher Wren. And the nightclub. Do you know about the nightclub, Kingston? Essence Nightclub. This is such a Kingston nightclub, right next to the ruins of the ancient bridge, and the walls of the nightclub are covered in Latin quotes. Honestly, I thought, this must be a posh nightclub. And then I found this article in a national newspaper. Essence Nightclub shut down after a 30-man brawl. in which 210 of the witnesses were revealed to have criminal convictions. That's magnificent! In the Royal Borough! Revellers used scaffolding poles as weapons. And I particularly enjoyed the statement from one of the bouncers that went, Ipsum Donitas Primora Adidas Trainers. Scaffoldia Polis, he was looking for a slap. But it's a royal borough. It's only good and proper that you have the odd feudal battle. It's the Saxon in you. Because Kingston is more earthy and much wilder than you'd guess from the Tudor super drugs and the swans. Mo Farah jumped naked off the bridge here once. There's banquet records. You've got a large immigrant population, and not just Jamaicans and Italians. Everyone's got them. You've got Koreans, including North Koreans, and drunk historians, and you boast about bra fittings. And I seem to remember one episode of Reggie Perrin where he said, sorry, I'm late, 11 minutes delayed. Dog is on the line in Surbiton. And the Queen must officially approve of all of this, otherwise she'd take her name away, she would. So I will leave you, Royal Borough of Kingston-upon-Thames, with an extract from Three Men on a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome, a famous book about his travels along the River Thames, starting in Kingston. And I'll leave you with this. Thank you very much for being delightful and royal. We ventured upstream, all Kingston glimmering in its autumnal glory, past an elegant Iron Age fort, proud on the starboard side. We called to a fisherman, asking what he knew of this structure. It's a branch of Primark, he said. To our right, we espied four blacksmiths lying in a heap. Disembarking that we may be of assistance, they called out, no, 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 sire, we are a work of art. We set off once more on our journey, but the boat caught fire. A passing stranger rescued us, saying, here, look who I've rescued. It's only Queen Victoria, isn't it?
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele, with additional material by Pete Sinclair. It was produced in the Royal Borough of Kingston-upon-Thames by Carl Cooper. It was a BBC Studios production.
The best thing about Linton is...
the goats. I love the goats.
Worst thing about Linton is
the goats, without doubt.
The goat issue. There we go.
You have to be careful.
Oh, I love them.
I'd rather eat them.
Best say neutral.
There's a very nice wool shop.
There's a sheepskin shop.
Everything shuts. 9 o'clock. You can't eat.
But we have got a superb funicular railway.
The Cliff Railway.
Glorious views.
The beautiful scenery.
Valley of the Rocks.
Come with an open mind.
Beware.
Yeah, very odd.
Goats.
Mark Steele's In Town.
Wonderful, excitable people from this lovely town, or indeed two towns, because Mark Steele's In Town this week comes from Linton and Lynmouth in Devon. A vast, sprawling den of urban squalor. Linton, as we all know, was inspiration for The Wire, where residents fear firearms and the authorities fear revolution, all of which is surprising for a town on the North Devon coast with a population of 7. But the first thing you realise here is that North Devon is nothing to do with South Devon. Don't mention South Devon here or you'll get someone growling, don't you talk to me about South Devon, that's not proper Devon. Devon with its Riviera, fancy boats and trains. Exeter's got a John Lewis, how can that be Devon? I tell you what's Devon, 15 miles from the nearest Morrison's, that's Devon. Impossible to get a phone signal, so the longest phone conversation you ever have is, hello Pete, no he's gone again. That's Devon. Rowing to Swansea to find something open after 5:10. Proper Devon! And in North Devon, you love the way it gets wild here. People say, oh, it's a shame you weren't here 2 weeks ago. It was great then. You say, oh, why, was it sunny? No! There was a tornado. Fantastic, it was. Waves come over the town hall roof. But even by North Devon standards, Linton is tucked away out of sight. If you're driving here, there comes a point where you think, ah, Exeter can't be far now. You go up a series of dusty tracks onto the wilderness of Exmoor, which goes on and on. And you wonder whether by mistake you've turned onto the Australian outback, and if you get to South Moulton, someone will tell you if you're going any further, you're going to need a lot of water and a powerful ride. And eventually you arrive in Linton, which must be the remotest place in England. It's 20 miles to the nearest town that's too big to be towed away by a van. Everything's 20 miles away. I bet if you're around someone's house and ask to use the toilet, they go, it's 20 miles away. I tend to save mine up and go once every 3 months when I pop into Ilfracombe. It also means it's the most impossible place to get a phone signal anywhere in the world. I bet most of the rescues that the Coast Guards make is people who've swum out into the Channel to try and get a signal. I asked to pay by card in the old coach house tea rooms, and they just went, ha, 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 no, there's no signal here. Sometimes you might get one in the churchyard. So if you want to pay by card, you have to walk up with them to the churchyard while they're carrying the card reader thing on a long bit of flex. And the vicar up there must think sometimes, oh, it's packed. The word of God is spreading at last. We will now sing hymn number 52. And everyone's going, hello, Dave, Dave. I've got you at last. No, he's gone again. There must be some crazies, like, on the internet, like the Pokemon game, that just pass you by here because no one can get a signal. To do a version of the Pokemon game here, you'd have to have people just walking around the streets picking up goats. Because you can't help noticing that just occasionally the issue of feral goats does pop up in conversation. This must be the only place during the referendum where people came round asking, are you leave or remain? And some people said, leave. Sooner we get rid of the goats, the better. So the goats may crop up later on. You have your own local paper, though? With headlines such as the one I saw the first time I was here. The front page said, woman attacks postman with Satsuma. To be fair, that is a bigger story than it sounds, because she'd had to drive 20 miles to Minehead for that Satsuma. But while this veneer of underworld brutality is all around us, it's cheery to see you can also see the funny side of crime. I went into a pub in Lynmouth and I got talking to the manager who told me about his honeymoon years ago. And I said, oh, does your wife run the pub with you? And he said, no, I'd done her away and buried her up on Exmoor. Now, what are you drinking? And I thought, I'm pretty sure he's joking. And then I thought, any other place I'd be certain, wouldn't I? Something else that you have to admire here is you've got this beautiful, tiny place and you've divided it into two. The bit at the top of the cliff is called Linton and the bit at the bottom is called Lynmouth. And it really is like a town with an upstairs and a downstairs, isn't it? I bet if Linton's playing music at night, Lynmouth bangs on the cliff and goes, oi, turn that racket down! I've got to be up in the morning to unpack some fudge. I know from my observations, I'd say Lynmouth is touristy, whereas it's Linton that is, like, keeping it real. If Lynmouth people rely on goods that they can only buy in their own shops, then every meal they'd eat would be fudge. We have grilled fudge in the morning, fudge and clotted cream for dinner, and at Christmas we roast a sheepskin jacket. To be fair, that isn't all they sell down there. You can also buy paintings of things that you can see anyway if you turn round. From Lynmouth to Linton, although it's a distance of 100 yards, it's a hill so steep there are escape lanes for anything that can't make it and packs up, and you can call for help until you realise you can't get a signal, so I have to just live there for a month. But in Victorian times, when this became known as a tourist area for the first time, it was decided to make it easier to get up the cliff, and that's how you ended up with the magnificent Cliff Railway. And, this is a marvellous mode of transport, because it's like having a railway to take you downstairs, like a giant Stanner stair lift. When I first came in December, it was closed for engineering works. And when I asked what time it would be working, I was told March. It is a record-breaking railway in many ways, one of them being the one-minute journey costs £3. Making it marginally more expensive than if you hired Rihanna to give you a piggyback. Despite being a quite remote place,